You are listening to From Sobriety to Recovery with Jesse Mogul. Let's get to the show. Welcome back to From Sobriety to Recovery. I am your host, Jesse Mogul. I am in addiction recovery. I am doing this podcast at an actual decent hour in the day. It's 1:30 p.m. It's Thursday. There's a lot of fun things going on today, including having the house inspected. Got some really cool stuff done around the house as far as electrical work done. We're really starting to put this whole house project thing together with some of the things that we're seeking to do over the spring and summer. And then later on tonight, I get to teach neurolinguistic programming with Aubrey Pohl. She's been on the show a couple times, so you might recognize her name. Definitely you will know that I teach neurolinguistic programming because I'm pretty sure I mention it like every single episode. Gotten some great feedback on the debt episode, which I'm really happy to get positive, desirable feedback on that episode because I was a little on the fence on whether I actually got anything accomplished in that episode. Debt and money are such huge conversations, and there's so many layers to it that I wasn't quite sure that I brought it all together in a very coherent episode. And there are many topics that I'm going to continue to introduce to you all. Mind you, I'm not a financial advisor, but I do watch a lot of YouTube videos. I do pay attention to the economic strategies that this country appears to be trying to attempt. And I certainly have been victim of the housing crisis that happened in 08-09 when the stock market went down in 2001 after 9-11. Certainly, I have been messing around with my credit cards and my credit score and Bitcoin and all this other stuff for long enough that I do, as you can tell, based on the way I prepare for these episodes, most of them, not all of them, but I do prepare a lot for these episodes. I additionally put in a lot of research when it comes into my finances and what it is I would like to be able to accomplish in these this back half of my life. Certainly, I would love to go back into my 20s and instead of spending all of my money on drugs and alcohol, I would have at least started up a Roth IRA at 25. That would have been a cool idea. So if there's one thing I could tell you that you should look into, just to sort of leave the loop of the debt episode, episode 285, let's close it up a little bit, is that you could look into a Roth IRA if you, regardless of your age, it's really a good idea. And it's something that I'm going to launch into next year once I've paid down that $30,000 in debt I talked to you back in 285. So I believe I saw on Robinhood, which is a trading app for you to be able to trade stocks, I believe I saw on there that there's a way that you could start up a Roth IRA there. So I'm going to leave the debt episode to the parking lot for a little bit, and we're going to come back to that, and we're going to discuss credit cards and how they affect your credit score. I did find some really cool people on YouTube that I'll start linking some of their videos into the show notes, and definitely as I hopefully get back into the project of putting web pages together for each episode, I could then slide some of these links into there. So it'd just be a little bit more easy for you to locate. Very excited about that. If you want to go over to jessemogul.com/from sobriety to recovery, you'll see how I've already started to lay down the general format for how I'm going to create show notes for each of these episodes. And with the help of ChatGPT, we've already gone through and we've reconstructed each episode. I'm up to about 100 episodes so far where ChatGPT has taken the transcripts and broken them down into really tangible, easy to read information based off of the things I've said. And then I'm going to start building web pages up around them. It's just getting into that project has not been something I've been able to prioritize. Speaking of prioritizing things, we talk a lot on this show about habits and patterns and loops. We know what the habit loop is. We've talked about that a lot. Cue, craving, response, reward. And whether you've read about that in Atomic Habits or Habit Stacking or any of the other habit books that have come out over the last handful of years since Charles Duhigg really laid down some of the preeminent information about habits. And that's what you'll read if you go off and find Atomic Habits by Charles Duhigg. He talks about cue, craving, response, reward. And the industry, the field of addiction recovery, has been talking about you know, the cue, the response, and the reward for quite some time. This isn't new. If anybody could potentially be said to have figured it out first, it would probably be Pavlov. Yeah, Pavlov with his little bell and his little dog experiment, where he'd ring the bell and then he would feed the dogs, and eventually the dogs tied the bell to being fed so he could ring the bell and they would salivate even if no food was presented. So he could present a cue, a bell, and then the response would be that they would get to eat, and then the reward would be that the dog is full. Well, do dogs ever really get full? I have yet to find one that necessarily turns down food. So we discuss a lot about loops. And so one of the things that I have talked about a lot, but not necessarily given its own show, at least the way I'm remembering it, is how I have really expanded upon this idea of a habit loop, and how what we're doing is literally being recreated in our lives day in and day out, over and over and over and over and over again. And so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to lay out to you how I break down my behaviors in order to evaluate whether they are conducive towards the desirable life I am seeking to achieve, or whether they're leading to undesirable results. And for the longest time, whenever I would talk about this, whether it's on the show or just in people in passing, friends and stuff, I would literally break it down to, you got to locate the habit, you got to figure out how to replicate the habit, measure the habit, and track the habit. And part of that really got formed whenever I first learned about smart goals, right, where it had to be specific and measurable and attainable, realistic and timely. That's really where the foundation for this idea came into play years ago when I first heard about SMART goals. Then I started to realize that there's a lot of behaviors that I have that until I locate it and even aware of it, then it's really hard for me to do anything about it. And then I'm like, okay, well, if we locate the habit, and let's say the habit is leading us somewhere that we like, well, then we want to figure out how to replicate it. Because if you can't locate it, then you can't replicate it. If you can't replicate it, then you can't measure it. And if you can't measure it, you can't track it. And if you can't track it, you can't achieve your goals. Because part of the process of achieving a goal is knowing that you're getting toward it. Because if you don't know you're getting toward it, then you're just going to keep doing the behavior, hoping you're getting toward it. But you could end up spinning your wheels for a year or two and not actually making any of the progress that would allow you to achieve said goal. And when I talk about it in this way, I really picture Michael Phelps. And I've brought him into this show many times because I'll never forget when he won that 7th gold medal, and I got teary-eyed and I got very emotional. And I think I was at like an after party for a wedding. At the time I was still drinking, so I got really emotional about this. And I just remember thinking, like, he won one of those gold medals by a thousandth of a second. Like, imagine if one day he'd have just been like, you know, I'm just going to half-ass this practice. And maybe that's the 1/1000th of a second he didn't gain in that practice that allowed him to beat that Australian, I think it was for his 5th gold in that race, that ultimately led him to be able to accomplish this amazing feat of Olympic conquest. And so when I talk about this, I'm like, okay, well, how would Michael Phelps, right? He's got to first locate like how he strokes, right? Well, is this a good stroke? Does this coach like the way that he's doing the freestyle? Great. We've located it. We've made sure that we enjoy the stroke. The stroke is the most efficient and effective as possible. Now let's replicate that stroke. No matter how tired you are, you can replicate this over and over and over and over again, presumably getting similar to same results, right? There's never really the same. No person can ever stand in the same river twice, because the person will have changed even if it's just 5 seconds later, and the river definitely has changed because that water is flowing. So you hope that you can replicate that stroke each and every time, knowing that as long as it doesn't deviate from the line of most effective and efficient, you are going to be able to achieve said goal. Well, then you've got to measure how often he swims and how many laps and how many miles and all this stuff. Like, there's a constant measurement, and then there's the tracking of his practices to make sure that as the event nears, he is at his peak performance level. And once you're able to track it, then you're able to know, okay, we are on our goal. you were able to shave a thousandth of a second here, or you were able to get back in the pool after only an hour of rest, where previously you needed 2 hours of rest and still get the same time in that race. Like, there's a whole process that athletes prepare themselves for to make sure that they are competing and achieving at their highest peak level of performance when, you know, when it's time to, you know, it's like shit or get off the pot time, right? Let's get this going. So we can take this and we can bring this to our lives, because Michael Phelps swam hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles in a gym with no one cheering, in a pool where nobody was standing around other than maybe his coaches and a few of the other trainers encouraging him. It was all internal encouragement to get himself up at 5 a.m. and swim all those laps and eat all those foods. I mean, that dude was up to 20,000 calories a day so he wouldn't lose muscle and he'd be able to maintain his peak level of performance and his endurance and all of these other things. Well, we're not necessarily world-class athletes. We're people in addiction recovery. We're normal humans seeking to live a quote-unquote normal life. We're just, you know, we're just who we are. But we can take the lessons that we have learned watching other people achieve things, and then we can model that behavior to say, okay, well, if this is the formula, and then we can take this formula I'm getting ready to explain to you, and then we can just literally spread it out to anything that we want to achieve, then while the results will differ and vary based off of the activity we're participating in, at least we know that if we can locate it, if we can replicate it, if we can measure it, we can track it, then we know we're getting to where we want to go, presumably, right? There's always going to be a detour or a deviation from the plan, because while planning is priceless, plans are generally worthless, because as soon as you start to activate said plan, life and the world and this the general chaos of being on a rock spinning at like 10,000 miles an hour is just going to fuck some shit up. So we can control what we can control, which is ourselves, our mind, right? I'm in control of my mind, therefore I'm in control of my results. You're in control of your mind, therefore you're in control of your results. I can't control your mind, therefore I cannot control your results. I can introduce you to material and you can do with it as you will. And that's what we're going to discuss today, because as I've been reintroducing myself back into the serving world, I have been noticing how so much of my behaviors inside those four walls is really muscle memory. And it's been honed and fine-tuned over years. So once I got back into it, it's literally like my body was like, oh yeah, we've been here before. We know how to do this. It's the same with bartending. It's very similar with how I do podcasts or how I build websites or even how I write. There is a pattern in there. There is a habit loop that I have created. And if I want to deviate from the pattern loop and perhaps be a little bit more creative with one episode or one essay or one opportunity with a table, knowing where I'm at in the loop allows me the opportunity to slide something new in to do something different. Like, I have this whole thing where I try not to say the same introduction line to a table when I'm super busy, slow, it doesn't matter. Where I might be like, I want to greet the table differently every single time today. Or whenever I go to describe a certain dish, I want to use different adjectives for this dish. It's just an opportunity for me to stretch my mental acuity and to just tap into an ability to take what could be just a mundane behavior and allow there to be a creative force behind it. So I don't feel like I'm just a monkey walking up to a table being like, what do you want to drink? What do you want to eat? All right, cool. Like, there's an energy I bring to it because I'm looking for an effectiveness, an efficiency. I'm looking to stretch myself consistently within this job. Like, I'm looking to be able to fine-tune different ways that would just make this job even more fun than, you know, I generally do find it fun. So let's discuss this after this long-winded introduction and all of this stuff that I've already discussed. I know there's some juicy nuggets in there you've already pulled out, because it's not just about locating, replicating, measuring, and tracking. There's a lot more going on in here than I had previously even realized. And so as I began to break it down, it actually turned into way more steps, and I'll put each individual step into the show notes, but I won't necessarily give it a summary because I don't want to turn these things into a, you know, a diatribe. Let's leave that for the spoken word. But at least you'll be able to understand like how I break down various patterns of behavior in my own life. And whenever I'm coaching people just like you, And if that's something that you've ever thought about being interested in, you can email me at fromsobrietytorecovery@gmail.com, or you can go over to jessemogul.com/askme and click on the coaching link and fill out the Google form, and then we can set ourselves up a little 30-minute recovery call, and we can just figure out where you're at in your life. It'd be an awesome opportunity for me to learn a little bit more about you and see if my talents and lived experiences can guide you to the fulfilling life you desire. And part of that fulfilling life that we all desire is being able to break down our behaviors, our patterns, our habits, our actions, our loops, and figure out where in there is an undesirable step that we could then shift and change to potentially lead us to a more desirable result. I say potentially a lot in this episode because we don't really know the result that we're going to get, the outcome that will be achieved until we take said action. And from that action, it may not get us necessarily everywhere we want to be, but it's certainly a step in the right direction, just being able to modify it and then evaluate the results. So first we discussed, we want to locate the pattern, the habit or the loop. We want to be able to identify these habitual behaviors that are conducive or potentially detrimental to our goals. This step is going to involve observing yourself, your daily routines, your triggers that lead to these habitual actions. Because in real life, this can mean, you know, noting down when and why you engage in certain behaviors. It could be reaching for a snack. It could be yelling at a partner, rolling your eyes at them, getting frustrated. Or it could be something as simple as how you walk up to the refrigerator to get yourself a glass of water. As I talk you through this, what I am picturing in my mind is me going up to a table and how that process plays out. Right, so I've greeted the table, and let's say they've all asked for four waters. So I go up and I go into the kitchen, I go up to the drink station, and I go to get the four waters. I walk the waters back to the table, I set them down, and I hand them all straws. Right, that's what the pattern loop is from a super chunked up perspective. Four people tell me they want each a water. I go get water. I bring water back. I set water on table. There you go. You have your water. Now what do you want to eat? But there's so much more that goes into it. Because right now I've located the pattern loop. I've walked up to the table, I get beverages, I go get beverages, I come back, I give them beverages. That's the overall pattern loop. But there's a lot more steps that are going on into this, right? And that's where we're going to move to step two, evaluating the pattern of the habit loop. We want to assess the effectiveness of this habit loop. Determine which of the steps, which of the actions that I'm taking support my aspirations, my desire to successfully get water to the table, and which ones might potentially be hindering that process. Now, this is really where it gets interesting, because if any of you who have ever worked in the industry, or hell, just at your own house, just because you grab a glass out of the cupboard, or just because you grab a glass from where they're all stacked up in the kitchen, doesn't mean that that glass is clean. That doesn't mean that that glass doesn't have water spots on it. It doesn't mean that that glass is ready to be served to a guest. And what I've noticed is that because I have taken glasses to a table that had a little schmeg, right? We serve grits at this restaurant. So grits can get all up in the dishwasher. And even though it's firing off like 250 degree water, I mean, it's some hot ass shit inside that little dishwasher. It's sterilized, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that little piece of grits didn't somehow end up at the bottom of that glass. And when you take a glass to the table and somebody's like, there's something floating in my water, it breaks the pattern loop. Now, all of a sudden, successfully bringing four glasses of water wasn't a success. One of them is dirty. And if I'm busy, now I got to go back into the kitchen with that dirty glass of water, throw that one away, grab another glass, and fill it up. And if I'm not mindful to check that glass, then I could potentially bring in another dirty glass. So within the pattern loop, you want to be able to evaluate the different steps that could be potentially harmful if ignored. Now, I get that having somebody with a dirty glass in front of them, that some grits that's gone through 200 degree dishwasher, right? It's not going to poison them. They're not going to and fall over. I mean, it's been sterilized because scalding water will do that, but it's still the visual optics of it. Nobody wants to drink out of a dirty glass. That's just not a thing that we're accustomed to. Not when we have more clean glasses right where the other glasses are. So it's part of my habit loop to evaluate the glass when I walk up. Are the straws, which are wrapped in paper, are they wet? Because if it was a wet straw, people might think, I don't want a wet straw, I want a dry straw. So I don't carry straws in my apron. I grab them fresh each and every time I go to get drinks. Right? Did they order coffee? Is there going to be a spoon in the napkin roll up? Or do I need to put a spoon inside the glass ahead of time? Are they going to want lemons? Do I want to put one lemon on the rim? Or do I want to give them a little ramekin of lemons? Because if they want more later, I don't want to have to stop what I'm doing to go to the kitchen and get that and potentially have to now run food or do some side work. What are some of the things that I can do in the process of getting them that initial round of beverages that will not cause more work for me later? There is an evaluation of the loop. You want to be paying attention to what steps are involved in these overarching loops. For you, it could be waking up in the morning and then you want to get to work. You want to get to your car, start it up, and pull out of your driveway. So from the moment that alarm clock goes off to the moment you are turning left or right out of your driveway, that is a humongous pattern loop. But within each of the different things that you do in the morning in order to go from bed to car, there are a lot of smaller pattern loops. There's the one where you turn off the alarm clock and hit snooze or get straight up. Do you walk to the bathroom first to go to the bathroom? Do you brush your teeth? Do you take a shower? Do you make yourself something to eat? Do you pour yourself a cup of coffee? Each one of these behaviors has its own set of steps. Therefore, it is its own loop. And you combine all of these loops to go from bed to car. And you can take some of these loops in and out. Maybe you don't want to shower this morning. Maybe you've forgotten to brush your teeth, but you still went to pee because we all got to do that when we wake up. Maybe you don't have time to sit down and drink your coffee, so you just pour it in a to-go cup and set it by the front door. You can deviate from some of these pattern loops, but the big ones, like forgetting your car keys somewhere, will keep you from pulling out of the driveway. Not waking up will keep you from getting into your driveway and being able to go to work. So there's some of these little tinier pattern loops that have to be accomplished in order for you to get into the car to be able to go to work. It's like that with everything in life. There are certain things that you can pull out. I could not look inside the glass and hand somebody a dirty glass, but I'm still going to have to fix that. I did bring them a glass of water. I just brought them a glass of water. They don't want a freaking drink. So I have to be paying attention to the little steps within the loop to make sure that I'm not just creating more work for myself down the line. And this could happen in your relationships. This could happen at the dinner table. This whole a stitch in time saves nine is an old-timey saying that's basically like just do it freaking right the first time or you're going to have to spend twice as long fixing the mistake to begin with. So now we've located the pattern, habit, or the loop. We've evaluated it. Now, once we evaluate it, we want to dissect it. We want to take it apart, like I've just explained. Going up to the drink station, how am I picking up the glass? How am I putting ice in the glass? How am I filling it up? Am I doing it out of the soda machine, or am I doing it out of the bigger water spigot thing that's sitting right next to the soda machine? How am I taking the straws out of the container to put them in my apron to walk them to the table? Am I carrying everything in one hand, or am I putting it on a tray? Is there anybody around me that might bump into me and knock my drinks out of my hand? How am I going to maneuver around them? Am I going to yell, coming out, coming down? Outside, am I going to yell something that auditorily signifies to people who might be around me that I'm moving towards the exit of the kitchen with a lot of heavy drinks that are spillable in my hands? Am I saying corner as I come around? Am I going left or am I going right, depending on flow of traffic, so I don't have to stop the efficiency of my movements? Am I turning right or turning left at the table in order to set these down? Going over left shoulder or right shoulder? Where are the silverware? Where are their phones? Where are their keys? Are there belongings in the way? Do I need to move those things around? Could I have given them a heads up ahead of time? Like, and I know for some of y'all, you're like, this dude's fucking nuts. And I don't have to put a ton of thought into this because these are things that I am just aware of. I have noticed them over time. And if you start to break down the different things that you do habitually throughout your day, you're going to notice that your awareness is actually way more lit up around these behaviors, these little steps, than you've ever thought before. And then whether you want to write them down or just notice them, especially if it's something you replicate over and over and over and over again, right? After a while, it was just like, yeah, I totally am going to start looking inside the glass for schmeg because I don't want to serve a dirty glass. I don't want a wet straw on the table. If somebody asks for a bunch of creamer for their coffee, I don't just give them a bowl full of creamers that are all individually wrapped with those little saran wrap tops, but I also give them an emptier bowl to put those empty creamers into. So now the table isn't cluttered with a bunch of empty creamer and sugar packets in real estate I'm going to need later to put a freaking plate down on top of. So I want to keep the table as clean as possible because when these people go to leave, I want to bus it so another table can get sat. Doing some of these steps effectively could be the difference between turning a whole section 3 times during a shift or 5 times during a shift. And if each turn's worth $100, just simply by saving myself 15, 20 minutes per table as the shift begins to mature toward closing could be the difference between 3 and 5 turns. That could be the difference between $100 and $200 of earning potential simply by monitoring each and every step that goes into the process of serving these people food and beverage and having them leave happy and full and healthy. Well, a little wavering on the healthy. Some of these things are super loaded with sugar, but they're fucking happy. And that's what we're looking for in our normal day-to-day life, is this ability to break down some of these larger pattern loops that we get ourselves into and begin to locate it, evaluate it, dissect it by breaking it down into its individual steps. And yes, some of them will be part of the cue, craving, response, reward system. And we can be mindful to locate that within the dissection of the habit, right? We know that the cue is a table getting sat. That's my cue to go greet them. The craving is for me to give them good service and to get them beverages and get their food into the computer so that they can get their food, they can eat, they can leave, and I can turn the table again. My response is to go up and be effective and efficient and friendly, give great service, be a great teammate, and the good tips will come. My reward at the end is the tip. It is the satisfaction of knowing that they've left happy. The reward is getting another table. The reward is making some money. Right now we've dissected the cue, craving, response, reward portion of the habit, but then there's still the dissection of all the steps that go into fulfilling the cue, craving, response, reward part of the habit. It's a simple analysis of your steps. So if it's how you're making lunch for your kids or how you're greeting your partner when they come home, there are opportunities to affect the overall outcome, at least the way you perceive it, the way you experience it based upon your actions and your awareness of these actions. See, these patterns and these habits are happening all the time. The phone dings, and that's like an alert, notification. That's your cue. Your craving is to find out whatever just dinged. Your response would be to open up the phone and read whatever the notification went off to let you know just occurred. And then your reward is finding out that information. That's dopamine. That's serotonin. That's the limbic system. It's all participating. So if you find yourself walking into your front door and getting in an argument with your partner almost the moment you cross the threshold, that's an opportunity for you to evaluate what it is that you're doing when you first walk in. That's the location. I walk in the door. You evaluate the pattern that has been established that could potentially be leading to the argument as soon as you walk through the door. You dissect what you're doing. And of course, you could be dissecting what they do, but you can't make them change their behaviors. You can influence their changing of their behaviors, of their actions based off of your actions. If you walk in and you're like, oh, what a beautiful morning, everything's going our way, they might laugh, they might chuckle, they might roll their eyes, but that would certainly be different than walking in and being like, hey, yeah, what's up? What you doing? What's your day look like? Right? There's going to be a different response loop that your partner is going to roll themselves right into based off the energy you bring into the room. And this is going to happen at work. This is going to happen at play. It's going to happen everywhere. Okay. So now we've dissected it. We're looking for the dissection. Once we dissect it, we reconstruct it. Right. Now that we've dissected and we understand the components of this existing habit, the steps that are involved, we want to reassemble these components into a new, potentially improved version of this habit loop that's both testable and manageable. Right. I mean, can you manage walking into a room every single time with a song, right? It's like, good day, sunshine. I mean, is that the way you want to walk in every morning when you guys go to have breakfast and coffee? If so, fucking go for it, Right? Maybe every day it's a different song. Maybe there's a little dance and a little jiggity, Nickelodeon. I don't know. But it's your opportunity to ask yourself, is this new pattern loop that you want to establish, is it testable? At the restaurant, it's absolutely testable because there's another table in 20 minutes. Is it manageable? Looking inside the glass, making sure it's not dirty, right? If Michael Phelps wants to change his stroke, is it testable? Yes. You were doing your hand in this degree of an angle. Now you're going to do it in this degree of an angle. Let's swim the exact same, 100 yards or length of the swimming pool, and let's see what the time changes. Does it get better? Does it get worse? What are some other variables that may have caused that? Did you just get done swimming it 5 minutes ago, or did you give yourself a 50-minute break? Like, it's testable. And then obviously if it's manageable, right? If you're going to hope to balance drinks on your head every single time you walk out of the kitchen, that may not be manageable. If somebody bumps in front of you, stops in front of you, and you've got to stop on a dime, you're balancing a drink on your head, it may slide right off. So testable and manageable is what we're looking for within the reconstruction, right? It's really a prototype. You're building up a whole new habit that's going to integrate the insights that you gained from the dissection, from the evaluation, and from the location of this habit, right? The aim here isn't to construct the new behavior perfectly. It's to construct it in such a way that you feel ready to take action upon it, right? Does it fulfill the desired outcome of bringing clean glasses to the table? Well, certainly we hope so. And time again, if looking inside the bottom of the glass, make sure that there's no schmeg in there, and making sure that our hands are dry when we grab the straws and that everything's balanced on the tray accordingly, that I say coming out or here or corner so that everybody who might potentially bump into me hears me and stops and gets out of my way, then yes, over the course of a lot of replication through the testability and the manageability of it, I can discover that this is the way I now want to take drinks out to the table. It doesn't mean that schmeg may not show up in another variation. Maybe somebody spilled something in the ice and didn't tell anyone. But then when that occurs, we begin to look for ways of shifting that variable. But it's all part of the reconstruction is not to try to make it perfect. It's to give yourself something to test, to give yourself something to take action on. These little mini experiments, these simulations that you can do are just your opportunity to go through it and test the new habit. See if it works. Does it work in different scenarios? Does walking into work singing, "Oh, what a beautiful morning," right? Does people enjoy that? Maybe it got rejected at home because the family's like, dude, way too fucking early for that kind of mood. Versus walking into work where everybody is already a little tense because of the commute to get into work. And then you come rolling in with a song and everyone laughs and goes, "Oh, Jesse, so silly." But now you shifted the mood. The scenario, the context of where you produce this habit could greatly shift through how you experience the accomplishment of this habit. Right? Yelling and singing when you walk into a church may not be favorable versus yelling and singing when you walk into a birthday party, right? A lot of it's going to have to do with more of the context meaning of where you're doing it at. But these are things to be locating and reconstructing through the evaluation process. Perfectly fine for you to try something out. And if it doesn't work, then say, okay, well, was it the location? Was it the environment? Or was it the behavior? Because if it's the behavior, then we can just slide a new behavior into that and say, oh, okay, well, I should have turned left when I entered into the kitchen. Instead, I turned right and I ran right into the wall. Okay, cool. Got to go left in the future. Versus, was I trying to perform this new habit loop reconstructed and evaluated and replicated and all that jazz at church versus doing it at a birthday party? So the environment and the location could greatly affect how this action is perceived by yourself and others around you. But it's within that reconstruction that comes from the evaluation, that comes from the dissection, that allows us to get into the next step, which is the replication. Right now we want to develop, we want to implement this new habit in, and we want to create it in such a way that we're able to do it over and over and over and over again. Right? It could be late night snacking. Right, so you've located the habit you don't longer want. You're late night snacking. You evaluate it. Well, why might you be late night snacking? Are you tired? Has it been a long day? Are you cranky? You're moody? Is your blood sugar low? Let's evaluate what might be causing you to want to reach for the cookies instead of just going to bed. Let's dissect what it is we're doing when we get into the kitchen. Because we may not want to necessarily not eat the cookies. You may not want to eat 10, but maybe instead we want to eat 2. And drinking a protein shake with the 2 cookies is more favorable to our long-term health than drinking a can of Coca-Cola with the 10 cookies. So now we've dissected it, we reconstruct this new habit, and now we seek to begin to replicate it. If upon the replication, do we start to get similar results? And again, I'm not using the word same here, because saying that we're going to get the exact same result is expecting that river not to have changed 5 seconds later, for you not to have changed. When I released 40-some pounds back for my 45th birthday from February 1st to June 15th, I went from 193 to 159. I had a very particular way in which I created my entire life for that five-month journey. Now I'm trying to replicate that here going into 48, but my body has changed. The way that it interacts with food has changed. My metabolism has changed. Where I could walk my 10,000 steps has changed. How I've been able to get my activity, my environment, so many things have changed that even though I'm attempting to replicate everything I did 3 years ago the exact same way today, I'm not getting the same results, or even similar, if I'm going to correct myself there. So now it's up to me to break down everything that I'm doing and figure out where might the variable have shifted. Certainly, I'm going to look at my body first and foremost, because I have aged almost 3 years since I did it last time. My environment's changed. I was in Southern California before, walking 10,000 steps in a loop around my apartment complex that was 300 steps per loop. Now I'm doing a majority of my walking on the treadmill, which I'm currently on doing this episode, or I could walk the neighborhood, but it doesn't have the same effect as doing a loop where I could accelerate myself and I could come back to the beginning or get to the end of this loop much quicker. Now I'm walking an entire neighborhood, so there isn't that reset of the habit loop of walking in circles that's happening every 2 minutes. So there's a lot of different things that are changing. My protein powder recently changed its formula. The way that I'm eating has changed its formula. My drive to accomplish this goal has changed, because before I wanted to see if I could get down to my high school weight the first time since I was in high school. Now I'm trying to do it for the second time, and I already know I've done it once, so the drive to try to prove something to myself is lessened than it was 3 years ago. But it's in this replication that I started to realize that there's some chinks in the armor of this habit loop, the overall arching big habit loop of releasing 25 pounds in 4 months before my 48th birthday. I'm finding myself stalled out 10 pounds away, and I'm a little confused as to what my next steps are. Do I change up my workout routine, which is the same workout routine I used then? Do I need to add more steps? Do I need to put on a weighted vest? It's within the replication of the new pattern habit loop that I'm able to start noticing where maybe the results aren't coming back to me in a similar way. Now, through this replication, we begin to measure. Now we're really paying attention to how things are going. It's like if you leave your house to go to work, you're going to pass the same gas station, you're going to pass the same convenience stores, the same restaurants. You know you're making your way to work because you're starting to see things along the route that are indicators you are getting closer to your destination. If the destination here is being 159 on my 48th birthday, I can begin to, through measurement, notice if I'm hitting it. That could be weighing myself every single morning and every single night before I go to bed to see how my weight fluctuations happening throughout the day. I'm measuring how much water I consume and noticing, am I getting to that gallon a day, which I know allows my body to optimize at peak performances? Am I drinking more coffee than I would prefer? Maybe going for that third cup at 4 p.m. where maybe a quick little workout or a little walk outside would invigorate and re-energize. It's through the measurements that we're able to notice if we're starting to get where we want to go. You could be measuring how well your coming into the kitchen every morning is working on the family based off of, right, are they smiling and laughing? Are they rolling their eyes and ignoring you? Are they starting an argument? Okay, well, that's a pretty easy way to measure whether your new behavior is going to work. And it could shift and change each and every day based off of the other people. Because now we've introduced another variable which we absolutely have no control over, which is other people's responses to us. So a lot of what we do is hoping that we get the desirable response from someone, but we can't possibly know that that's an absolute certain. I could drop the glasses off at the table and somebody could be like, no, you know, I don't like how cold this is. I don't like how it's not filled up with enough ice. It's too much ice. You know, you put a straw near the glass and I'm allergic to straws. Everything needs to go away. We don't know, but we can begin to measure as well as we can for those little check-ins that allow us to notice if we're getting to where we want to go. Right? We've replicated it. Now it's about measuring it. That's where that real SMART goal thing I talked about earlier, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely. And I think the T may have changed recently and not be timely anymore, but it might be like timeline specific. Do we know when we're trying to achieve this? For me, I know I've achieved my goal when the glasses land onto the table and everyone's like, cool, thank you for the beverage. I'm ready to order my food now. Perfect. That habit loop is now finished. The bigger habit loop of feeding these people and getting them out the door so I can set another table, that loop isn't done, but the loop to get them beverages has been accomplished. Later on, I'll keep an eye on their refills and I'll make sure that I hit those accordingly. And that's just what I call streaming. When my table is just officially streaming, they've got all their food, they've got all their sides, they've told me, yep, we are good. I've done my 2-minute check-in. Everyone's smiling, they're happy. Now the table's streaming. Now they're just good to go. They literally are just going to right out the door. All I got to do is just keep an eye on their beverages being full, be around enough in case they need some more mayonnaise or mustard or whatever their condiment of choice might be, and keep the table pre-bussed so that when they ultimately do get up, there's less to clean. And plus, everybody likes dirty dishes out from in front of them. So there's a lot of smaller loops within the big loop, just like there is with me releasing all this weight. I know that it's what I'm measuring it toward, and I know what my deadline is. And that's where we come in with the I think we're on step 7 now, of tracking the progress. Being able to track it is one of the most instrumental portions of achieving a goal that most people do not pay attention to. I see people at the gym lifting weights, and they're not writing down their figures. I don't even say that you have to go back and review your figures, but it's just in the act of writing them down that it goes from just being something that you're keeping track of in your mind to something that is tangibly in front of you that you can reread days and days and days later and know that it was factual the moment it happened, because that's what you wrote down. So by being able to track, is this the way to get glasses to the table? Am I consistently getting everyone to agree that they are happy with their beverage so I can move on to the next step of service? Is this happening consistently? Yes, then I'm tracking the progress of my new habit loop around making sure glasses come out clean and mission accomplished. Am I tracking how much I'm weighing every single day so I can notice if there's a fluctuation on the nights when I do skip the protein shake and instead eat a beignet or eat a cookie? Am I noticing that the next morning my weight is changed according to what it was the day before? Did I drink 2 gallons of water today? How is that going to change how much I weigh the next morning? Or how much is that going to change how much I weigh before I go to bed? By tracking our progress, we're able to decide if we're actually getting to where we want to go, right? The measuring and the tracking is huge. And so many people don't want to track how they're managing their money, right? I mean, that's what we're doing. We're measuring our bank account. Every single time we go to spend money, we get our paycheck. Oh, well, cool. It's at $1,000. A week later, it's at $0. Well, is your desire to save money actually working? Because if you measure your bank account and it's at $0 and you were hoping to have $500 in there, you know, the measurement's a little bit off. Well, let's go back and let's track your spending. Let's see where you were pulling out the debit card, the credit card, you know, the ATM, and spending money where perhaps it was less advantageous to your savings goals. Tracking the progress and keeping it, whether it's in a journal or it's on your phone. And yes, I'm not saying you can't keep this information in your head, but certainly it helps to get it out of your head, because you are going to change the picture. You're going to change the little movie. You're going to change the story in your head over time. So if you walk in 5 straight mornings singing "Good Day Sunshine" and everybody laughs and giggles and high fives and it's a wonderful morning, but then day 7, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, seriously, this song again, right? Well, it was working for the first 5 days. Maybe it's not the singing that isn't working. Maybe it's the fact that you're repeating the same song. So let's track it. Change the song. Does it everybody get fired up now? Or is it really the singing that everybody's over? But it's important that through the tracking process, we're able to notice whether we're making it to our desired goal or not. And that's where we bring in number 8, directing our mind toward the goal. The whole process of this has been really the direction of the goal. And I could have easily made this the precursor to this entire episode. Direct your mind towards the goal. So whether we know for a fact what the goal is at the beginning, or we just start to locate all the different pieces of this, your desired goal is already going to be influencing the process of locating, evaluating, dissecting, reconstructing, replicating, measuring, and tracking. You're going to be goal-oriented this entire time. But it's within this step of step 8. And again, I've numbered them, and there is an order, but whether it's the 8th step or it doesn't really matter numerically, as much as we know that directing our mind toward the goal is a consistent check-in that we want to be constantly paying attention toward. Right, we want to continuously remind ourselves of what the goal is, of why this is important to you. This mental practice will keep you focused. It will align your new habits with your behaviors, and you will seek to find the achievement through the outcomes. These daily reminders of the benefits of healthy goals, of healthy communication, of healthy interactions, of checking the glass for schmeg, or using the same, you know, breaststroke over and over and over again, the way that you drive to work and noticing if you leave at 7 a.m., traffic down this one road's a little bit more chaotic, but if you had turned left on this one road, then you could have turned right on the next road and there's no traffic there. Right, very Truman Show-esque, like where are you noticing the traffic patterns? Where could you be more effective and efficient by shifting a tiny behavior that allows you to achieve the goal of getting to work on time? If I leave for the restaurant when I'm supposed to be in at 8 a.m., Triana is extremely full of traffic. And if I would just turn left, I think on Harbin, things would be a lot better. I could get to Harbin, which would get me to Nance, which is a lot less traffic, and it turns into a four-lane road, with, you know, two lanes each way, much sooner than the Triana does. So at 8 o'clock in the morning when I got to be there, I don't want to stay on Triana because I'm going to get stuck at the light at Capshaw. Versus if I were to leave for work at 5:45 in the morning when I need to be there at 6, there's nobody in my way. So going straight down Triana and turning left on McCreary and then turning right on Nance is fine. I'm still going to get to work in less than 8 minutes. But you make that 7:45 and all of a sudden there's a lot more cars in the way. So now I need to be able to shift up the pattern loop to take different turns in order to be able to maneuver myself through the traffic more efficiently. And some people might say, Jesse, this sounds exhausting. You sound exhausting. You are exhausting me right now just explaining this. And I get it. If you've never really stepped back and as an observer watched yourself maneuver through your life, this could seem a little overwhelming. It could sound like a whole lot of shit to be paying attention to. I have been doing this to myself for freaking years. Now, did I have them all labeled? You know, locate, evaluate, dissect, reconstruct, replicate, measure, track, direct my mind to my goals, take action, discipline, continued reflection, which are the next 3. Was I always labeling these and breaking them down into the steps? No, but I can assure you that this was happening at an unconscious level. Now, by pulling it out of the unconscious into the conscious, I'm just now aware of all of this, and I'm able to actually do something about potentially getting myself to the more desirable result. This will happen in a fucking nanosecond once you start to habituate just the behavior of looking at your life through this lens. You conversely can just do nothing about the way that you are behaving, and then you can just continuously wonder why when you walk into the kitchen every morning, everybody's just a grumpy asshole, and you could try to change some things, and maybe it works. But again, if you aren't able to evaluate it and then dissect it, then how and reconstruct it, how can you replicate it? Right back in the day, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the episode, it was literally, I just thought it was locate, replicate, measure, track. There's just a lot more going on here, but it's actually pretty simple. You can locate it and you can seek to replicate it. And if it's not working, do something else and then replicate that until you get the desired result. But it's through this process of evaluation, dissection, and reconstruction, it's those 3 components that allow us to move from the locate to the replicate so effortlessly. Then we get into measuring and tracking. And it might potentially sound exhausting, and you may think this dude needs to freaking take some chill pills and just stop. But at the same time, like, I froth at the mouth like Pavlov's dogs for efficiency and effectiveness in my life. I fucking love it. I mean, I eat it up like you would a freaking cupcake on top of a steak slathered in blue cheese. It is like my brain is looking for efficiency anywhere that it can. And for the longest time, that was it. I was hell-bent on efficiency. But doing something very smoothly in flow, it might be efficient, but is it effective? Is it getting me the desired outcome? So I had to bring in effectiveness. It's not just enough to be efficient without the effectiveness, any more than it's good to be effective without the efficiency. Getting the assignment done at midnight on a Wednesday, that might be effective to do it the way I'm doing it, the way I'm building out my essays and doing my research and creating the bibliography. But is it as efficient? Is it taking me 30 hours where it could be taking me 5? So I'm looking for an effective way to get the assignment in so I get the A, but I also want to be efficient in my movements, in my behaviors. And if I'm just focused on efficiency, getting the essay done as fast as possible, then I could be finding myself looking at B's and C's. And that's not getting me to the goal of the A. That the efficiency is getting the essay done much quicker than it potentially would have been done had I been a little bit more slow and effective, but I'm not getting the grade I want. So it's imperative to me that I am mixing efficiency and effectiveness together, right? It's like that deliciousness that comes from dipping the French fry in the mayonnaise and the ketchup. You may not like that combination, but to me, it is one of the best combinations that has ever existed. So it's through this tracking and this directing of our goals that we're able to start continuously taking action. It's the fourth principle in my book, College Success Habits, and it will continuously be something that I say to you over and over and over again. Once you have directed your mind to your goals, right, you've located, evaluated, dissected, reconstructed, replicated, measured, and tracked, directed your mind to your goals, now you're just going to continuously take action, right? We have moved beyond just wondering if this is going to work. And now we know, okay, let's just keep replicating and doing, and let's tracking and let's measuring, and let's focus on the goals, and let's take action each and every day. Anytime this habit loop shows up, we're taking action on it, right? And again, there's still that evaluation. There's still that dissection. There's still potentialities for reconstruction, but that replication, that measuring, that tracking, that directing of our mind towards our goal is what will fuel the taking action. Right, this is where we start to ask ourselves, why am I doing this? And we've been asking ourselves that for a long time, but it's within that taking action over and over and over again that your mind begins to turn this back into the habit loop that it was always meant to be. And then it starts asking itself, well, why? Why is this still important to be doing? Is this still leading me where I want to go? If the answer is yes, then you just move on to discipline. If the answer is no, I'm not getting the results from this day-to-day taking of the action, now we go back up and we relocate, evaluate, you know, the whole deal. The whole deal. I'm going to just keep repeating it till you can, like, it sounds like a song. We're locating, evaluating, dissecting, reconstructing. Then we're replicating and measuring, the tracking towards our goals, taking action every day, discipline all the way, and continued reflection evaluation comes today. I totally just made that up. I have no idea where that came from. Okie dokie. And I may have just lost half of you on that one, but I'm thinking those of you who stuck around are like, do we need to give Jesse a piss test? Anyways, discipline. Maintaining this disciplined approach is what the developing and the sticking to your new habits is going to lead you toward that accomplishment that we want, right? We're in this valley of despair, this valley of questioning who we are, what we're trying to achieve, what we want to become. Are we going in the right direction? It's in this discipline that we begin to go up the mountain of accomplishment, that we begin to achieve the things that we want. And again, we're always doing this entire loop, but it's in the taking action and it's in the discipline of day in and day out, not pulling out the debit card, greeting the table this way, walking into the kitchen first thing in the morning, going into the gym a certain way. It's in the consistency that the amazing, great things happen. Any of these leadership TikTok people you might follow, any YouTube video that talks about discipline will discuss that it's in the boring minutia details where the amazing happens. Right, it's that consistency Michael Phelps did every single day to go in there and swim his 20 miles, to do his stroke the same way, because that was the way him and I think it was Scott Bowman was his coach. That's the way they decided this was going to be the stroke and the way he would deliver it each and every time, no matter how tired he was. It's in the discipline. That's the consistency. Thinking you're going to go to the gym one day and all of a sudden you're going to release 30 pounds is ridiculous. That's not the way that it goes down. But you go to the gym every single day, and 90 days later, you've accomplished your goal. One huge workout isn't going to cut it. You've got to be consistent. One loving gesture towards your partner is not going to make everything okay, isn't going to be able to smooth over the mistake from yesterday, or isn't going to be able to make up for the things that you have done in the past, right? It's the consistency. That's where we rebuild the trust. That's where we start to really anchor ourselves into the love for ourselves, for those that we care the most about, for the world around us. It's in the discipline. It's in the mundane. It's in that consistency that great things are achieved. Firing yourself off like a rocket one day and then going about the rest of your week apathetic is not going to achieve your goals. It's the consistency. That's the discipline. It reinforces these self-set rules and patterns and behaviors that you've placed upon yourself. All right, and then we finish up step 11, if I've even tried to number these, would be this continued reflection and evaluation. We want to be reflecting upon this habit loop. We want to be evaluating its effectiveness, ongoing. People adapt. Hedonistic adaptation. We talked about this a lot. You can be saving up for years for that house, and then 6 months into owning the house, that's your new normal. And maybe you're not keeping the house as clean as you always thought you would. Maybe you're not tending to the lawn the way that you had daydreamed you would if you ever owned your own house. It's in that reflection and evaluation that you can re-anchor yourself into the values that you're adhering to in your life that were enabled to begin with to help you achieve the ownership of the home. Spending years of your life to finally be able to buy a home and then being half-assed and you're taking care of it could just be a programmed loop from being a renter all of your life, but now you're an owner. So now you have a different set of evaluations and reflections that which you want to be monitoring your behaviors. And this could work with buying a home or a car or a pair of shoes or a watch or getting into a new relationship. You have adapted to it being in your life. You do not want to release the amazingness you felt when you accomplished this goal. You want to reinvigorate yourself time and time again. And that's where I get this very much, I do get invigorated by being able to be slightly more efficient with the table, slightly more effective, slightly more efficient and effective writing an essay, doing a podcast, building a website page, giving a speech, standing still, or maybe not standing still, waving my hands, my arms. Like, I don't ever want to find myself so adapted to a certain behavior that I stop enjoying what's once made me smile. As we begin to break our habits and our patterns around drinking and using drugs and releasing all of that bullshit, it's not just drinking and doing drugs that was the problem. Yes, forward facing, that was what was creating this shit show going on. But just taking the alcohol and the drugs does not fix everything. In fact, I would debate that it is just the very first step of thousands of steps that will get you on the right direction. It is imperative that we live underneath this humongous umbrella of the pattern habit loop that we do not get intoxicated. We do not use substances to change who we are, that we are sober and we are good to go. But that is awesome that we are living under that umbrella. Every day is the best day of our lives when we wake up sober, but it's our choice to perceive it that way. It's our choice to embrace it that way. You can wake up and be like, fuck today. I hate today. Why am I sober? Go for it if that's what you want to do. I don't think that that's kind of mood that's going to carry you through the day feeling like things are going in the right direction. It's up to you to decide your mood, your attitude, your experiences of the life around you. You are in control of your mind. Therefore, you are in control of your results. If you are willing and able to step into the location, the evaluation, the dissection, the reconstruction, the replication, the measuring, the tracking, the directing, the taking of the actions, embracing the discipline, opening yourself up to the awareness that comes from continued reflection and evaluation, when you kick alcohol and drugs to the curb, when you walk away from them and say, thank you, next, awesome. Now the rest of your life is ahead of you. What are you going to do with it? Because you can sit on your couch eating the bonbons, watching The Simpsons in your underwear. I'm not saying that there isn't a time and a place for that. But people who accomplish things that mean something to them pour themselves into it. If something is just handed to you without sacrifice, without blood and sweat and tears and just that, if something is just handed to you, you are not going to appreciate it the way that you are if you have to slug your way up that mountain through all the different weather patterns, through all the different trials and tribulations and the rolling rocks and the potential avalanches and the tsunamis of life. And it's not that life has anything against you. It doesn't hate you. Some people might just be dicks, and I'm sorry that those people exist. Do your best to walk the fuck away from those people. But when it comes to life in general, people are not part of everything you do. You are. People trying to tell you how to do your shit get to walk away. They get to sleep in their own bed. They get to close their own eyes and be in their own mind. You are the center of your universe according to your mind, just as much as they are the center of their universe according to their mind. And if they try to direct every single one of your actions, you end up living the life they want for you. And that's going to piss you off. If you listen to your preacher, your teacher, your mom, your dad, your siblings, I don't know, the weatherman on Fox News or the other person on the other news channels, whatever the hell it might be, right? If you listen to these people and you allow them to dictate how you live your life, you are going to wake up one day and be furious with yourself because you're living the life they want you to be living. And what happens if that person decides to walk? What happens if that person decides that they're going to change their life? You think they're going to always call you up about it? What happens if that person changes their opinion and now the behavior they've been trying to instill in you for umpteen years is no longer the behavior that they are conducive with? So now they're going to try to just change you based off of what they want? What do you want? This is your opportunity to step into your best self. This is the opportunity you've been waiting your entire life for. Yeah, I get it. We've got trauma. We've got pain. We've got sorrow and sadness, disappointments, heartbreaks, loss. It sucks that life has to do that to us, man. I mean, again, it's not like life is making this happen. It's just you can't have the highest of highs without experiencing some lows. Feeling that love that comes from caring about somebody so much in your life, but we're also humans and eventually we expire and we move on to whatever that next phase might be. It comes and it goes, but I would rather embrace the joy that I feel with someone today. Let's take my dad, for example, who just turned 68. One day he won't be here. That'll break my heart. So I'm going to drive my ass out there. And even if my car breaks down, and even if the weather is shitty, and even if it's cold as hell, and the battery on the boat doesn't work, if I had to freaking pull that damn boat out into the water myself with my teeth, I would have made sure he and I and my stepmom, Donna, were on that boat watching an eclipse, even if it was hidden behind clouds, because I wanted to have that memory for the rest of my breaths. When we go to dissect our lives, when we go to figure out what it is we want to achieve, we can either blindly just keep doing shit, hoping that it gets us where we want to go, or we can just step in to the fact that this is happening all around us. I'm not going to make you pay attention to this stuff. I'm not going to tell you that if you don't pay attention to this stuff, you will never accomplish anything. That would be presumptuous and arrogant of me, and I have no interest in being either of those two things. I have noticed this in my life. I use this day in and day out to make sure that I'm achieving the things I desire to achieve. I hope that in these accomplishments, other people are able to manifest their best selves through the words that I speak, through the knowledge I've gained, through the stories I tell. I certainly want all of this to be beneficial, but I can't guarantee that it is. I can simply just pay attention to my behaviors, make sure that they are congruent with me, and hope for the best whenever it lands in front of everybody else's feet. You have an opportunity to make these decisions for yourself, to step into your highest sense of self. You look at yourself in the mirror each and every day. Are you happy with who's looking back? On January 12th of 2017, I saw a monster looking back at me, and I was disgusted, and I was on death's door. And I was covered in my own filth, and I was pretty sure I was having a heart attack. My room looked like a frickin' rave was going on in there. And I didn't know any other way than to just take out the one thing I was sure was the root cause of all of this. The alcohol and the drugs. Everything I've achieved since then is, while, yes, again, built on the foundation of sobriety and recovery, but sobriety and recovery didn't make all of this stuff happen. The books and the speaking and the teaching and the podcasting and the corporate workshops and all of this coaching and this master's degree, all upon the foundation of sobriety and recovery, but not directly because sobriety and recovery did anything to make this happen. It's the foundation, but each and every day I did something with my sober self, with my recovering self. I took the actions that have led me here on the foundation of sobriety and recovery. But sobriety and recovery itself is stagnant. It started that day. It grows. I'm having a hard time trying to use the right words here to just say that, like, well, I'm sober, so everything's fucking good now. Life, make my life better. No. Congratulations. You stepped into sobriety and recovery. Now what? What's next? Sobriety and recovery is the foundation. It can be the fuel, but it does not dictate that you will be successful for the rest of your life. Your actions, your behaviors. Are you locating your patterns, evaluating them, dissecting them, reconstructing them, replicating them, measuring them, tracking them, directing them, taking the actions that create the discipline that open you up to that continued reflection and evaluation? When you do these things consistently, your life will get better. Because any action is better than no action. You are not stuck. You are standing still. Stop blaming the past for what's happening today. That is gone. It is a closed book. Yes, is there trauma and there's sorrow and there's sadness? I just went through that like 7 minutes ago. We know that's there. Everybody has it in their own unique lived experienced way. But blaming something that happened 20 years ago that you're sick and tired of today. Well, I've just always done it this way. And even though I'm always having an argument with my partner, I refuse to change because this was the behavior modeled to me whenever I was 4. Fuck that, bro, and brosettes. If you are aware enough to know that the behavior is leading you down a path that you no longer want to go down, stop walking down that alley. It's time to bring into your awareness not just the stories you have been repeating to yourself over and over and over again for the last umpteen amount of years, but bring into your awareness the fact that you are literally the person who could change everything for yourself. If you're just willing to step into your uncomfort zone, be a little discombobulated, potentially confused, or frustrated, or overwhelmed. We celebrate those things in the Life Through Leadership Academy. We celebrate those things when we teach NLP. What? You're confused? You're frustrated? You're overwhelmed? Awesome. You're learning something new. You're stepping outside your comfort zone. Congratulations. You have achieved something today. Don't trance your way through life, people. Pay attention to your life. Follow what I've discussed here. I'm not saying that everything's going to be perfect. You're going to be living in a castle in the sky and it's going to be raining Benjamins. I'm not saying you're going to be eating filet mignon 17 times a day or your bathtub will be filled with Perrier. I'm just offering you an opportunity to take from the unconscious, bring it to the conscious awareness, and begin to actually make the changes you've always desired. What you do with this knowledge is completely on you. I will introduce it to you and I will repeat it over and over and over again because I know eventually it will get in and something will change. And that will be the proof that you've needed to convince yourself that sobriety and recovery is the fucking way of life. You are powerful beyond anything that you can possibly imagine. Don't be the person who rejects yourself first. All right, my friends, inclusivity over exclusivity, the power of positive energy, release and flow. Every day is the best day of our lives when we choose to perceive it that way. Shout out to Sunshine. Shout out to Robert. Glow on, my friends. Today was a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Bye-bye.